Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, November 30th, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. And we will begin on the front page with a piece from the Champaign Police called Burglary Unit Making Headway, Home Vehicle Property Crimes Show a Decline, by Mary Shank, Champaign. When Champaign Police Detectives Rob DeLong and Jody Cherry walked into the Urbana home of a man suspected of fencing stolen goods this April, they wanted to cry. Both tears of joy for the motherload of goods they had found after months of investigation, and tears of self-pity for the work ahead cataloging and trying to get the items back to rightful owners. DeLong said they spent a full week logging almost 500 separate items, including cell phones, laptops, cash registers, high-end perfume, even hoverboards. 7 months later, the two-man burglary reduction unit for the Champaign Police Department still hasn't accomplished all the reunification. What they have done is make significant headway in reducing property crimes in the city, tangible work that resulted in the Champaign City Council agreeing in September that the resources focused in that area are worth the investment and will continue. In a report released this week, the department said that in the period from October 1, 2017, to September 30, 2018, the number of residential burglaries was cut by 48% and the number of vehicle burglaries went down 35% compared with the 12-month period before. The time period correlates with the start of the specialized detective unit. Their proactive efforts, combined with learning trends and patterns of repeat offenders, produced those results, said Lieutenant Nate Rath, supervisor of investigations. They worked citywide and focused on where crimes were popping up. This was a large part of a broader effort by the department generally to combat property crimes. Officers knocked on doors and delivered pamphlets with tips on how not to be the victim, he said. Not wanting to give away tricks of the trade, Rath said the department's electronic technician group, who assisted them with technology to perform investigations, was extremely helpful. Think bait car with a motion-activated camera and a tempting bag of items inside that, including a GPS tracking device. Those tools resulted in a 17-year-old male who was linked to several car break-ins, one vehicle theft, bicycle thefts, possession of a loaded gun, and a gang-related fight, going to prison. Cherry said their year-long effort resulted in the arrests of 51 adults and juveniles, more than 100 felony charges filed, and the recovery of more than 650 stolen items valued at $175,000. What officers hauled out of the home of Crispy Crunchy Chicken owner Kirit Patel included items reported missing or stolen years ago. For instance, a cell phone belonging to the child of a fellow police officer was in the loot. It had been missing for 4 years, Cherry said. Trying to track down everyone was impossible, he said, of the rightful owners. Earlier this month, Patel pleaded guilty to theft, admitting that he paid cash to burglars and thieves who came to his Champaign restaurant with the goods, intending to resell them. He was sentenced to 6 months of electronic home detention and 30 months of probation. DeLong said police seized from Patel's home only items listed in the search warrant, mainly electronics. But there were many other brand new things in his home, like 20 sets of bed sheets that were likely purloined. They would send people out with shopping lists to take stuff, Cherry said. While Patel's represented the largest cache of stolen items in one place, the burglary reduction unit also scored when it arrested James Kirkwood in May for stealing items from the unlivable apartments of several University of Illinois students displaced by a devastating April 27th fire at 609 South Randolph Street in Champaign. Cherry said police found a variety of PlayStations, phones, college-type stuff belonging to 10 to 12 victims among Kirkwood's property. He is now serving a 10-year prison term. State's attorney Julia Reitz said that in 2017, her office filed charges of burglary, residential burglary, and criminal trespass to vehicle in 149 cases involving juveniles and adults arrested by Champaign police. So far in 2018, that number is 112 cases filed, a decrease of 25%. And next from the University of Illinois, Chancellor, Chief Panel, Not a Mascot Committee. Task, Come Up with Recommendations to Reconcile Past, Future, by Julie Wirth, Champaign. Chancellor Robert Jones wants to make one thing clear about the commission he appointed to flesh out suggestions from the critical conversation on Chief Illiniwek. It won't be choosing a mascot or new traditions for the University of Illinois. This is not a committee to name a mascot, Jones said Thursday, following the first meeting of the new Chancellor's Commission on Native Imagery, Healing, and Reconciliation. As part of its charge, the panel was asked to come up with a process for establishing new traditions to fill the void left by the chief's departure, which could also include a process for naming a mascot, emphasis on could, Jones said. If we decide to go down that road, they're not going to be the ones to do it. The UI announced Thursday that the commission will be co-chaired by Eric Jolly, president and CEO of the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundations, former university administrator and member of the Cherokee Nation, and retired Caterpillar executive Stu Levenick, a UI alumnus, donor, and former captain of the UI football team. Also on the panel are former Chief Illiniwek portrayers, both official and unofficial, as well as the head of the Peoria Nation in Oklahoma, which opposes the chief and includes descendants of the Illini Confederation. The commission also includes representatives of UI Athletics, former UI trustees, and BET co-founder and UI alumna Sheila Johnson, among others. The commission was recommended by an advisory group that compiled feedback from the Critical Conversation events last spring. That report suggested finding a way to commemorate the chief's long history on campus and exploring the possibility of a mascot along with other new traditions. Four-point plan. The chancellor's charge letter describes the commission as an informal ad hoc working group to serve as an important internal advisory resource for me and my leadership team as we consider how best to formulate policies and processes at the University of Illinois. He asked the panel to provide written recommendations on 4 points before the end of the next semester. 1. How to provide closure, healing, and reconciliation for stakeholders. 2. How to facilitate the establishment of new traditions. 3. How to remember the history of the chief with a focus on both the intent and impact of the tradition. And 4. How to honor and partner with the Native nations for whom Illinois is their ancestral home. Jones asked the commission to provide regular updates to the public on its work and solicit input from stakeholders throughout the process. Chief not coming back. We're saying very clearly that Chief Illiniwek is not coming back, Jones said Thursday. Whether people like Chief Illiniwek or not, he was very much a visible part of this university for a very, very long time, 89 years or so. If he's not coming back, then what do you replace that with? Jones has not committed to a mascot, but favors developing new traditions. He cited a fan favorite at Ohio State, where the marching band spells out Ohio during its halftime routine and goes through an elaborate process to dot the I. At Ole Miss, he said, defensive players started forming their hands in the shape of a shark fin in front of their helmets, following big plays, and the land shark defense was born. The school, which stopped using its Colonel Reb mascot in 2003, recently unveiled a new one, Landshark Tony. At Illinois, Jones said, a small tradition is developing around Lovey Smith's famous beard, with fans wearing replicas to games. But this panel won't be asked to come up with ideas, Jones said. Rather, it will take all the feedback from the critical conversation and make recommendations for how to proceed in the short and long term, before we make decisions about what we're going to implement, Jones said. The chancellor said the advisory panel felt that having a representative group do that was preferable to Jones trying to make those decisions in isolation, and he agreed. Different perspectives. Jones said he's known Jolly more than a decade. They met with when Jolly was head of the Minnesota Science Museum, and Jones was at the University of Minnesota and served on a foundation board together. He is probably one of the most effective people I know to help communities heal beyond traumatic or divisive situations, Jones said, adding that Jolly helped him plan the spring critical conversation event. Jolly has worked at the University of Oklahoma, University of Nebraska, and Indiana State, and knows higher education quite well, he added. Levinick brings the perspective of a student athlete who played football at the university during a time when the Chief was in its heyday, Jones said. He was very helpful in helping me and others understand that perspective. He also helped others understand that the Chief isn't coming back, and it's time for us to move in a different direction for the benefit of the university, Jones said. We tried to have balance across the committee, folks with different perspectives, Jones said. As we framed it, it's a coalition of the willing, people who are willing not to represent any particular constituency group, even though they come from different constituencies, but are willing to roll up their sleeves to help the institution find a path forward without Chief Illiniwek. Everybody I called was gratified and humbled to participate, he said. Jolly and several other committee members could not be reached for comment Thursday. Kaufman weighs in. Some critics on both sides have had reservations about the outcome of the chancellor's initiative. In an email Thursday, longtime chief opponent Stephen Kaufman criticized Jones for not including anyone with knowledge of the past 3 decades of the debate on Illiniwek and the nationwide discussion of the use of American Indian imagery in sports and for placating and pandering to a few. He said the moral equivalence given to those who would perpetuate ignorance and racism is shameful, and the effort appears to be a charade designed to prevent meaningful progress in the effort to end all vestiges of the Chief. But the Campus Academic Senate last month endorsed the Critical Conversation Initiative, calling it a good-faith effort to heal campus divisions over the issue and to seek a sustainable way forward. And joining co-chairs Eric Jolly and Stu Levinick on the Chancellor's Commission on Native Imagery, Ron Bess, former Illini football player who is now CEO of Merge Advertising Agency in Chicago. John Coughlin, UI professor and head of Department of Communication. Omar Cruz, student who has recently portrayed Chief Illiniwek, which was officially retired in 2007. Ivan Dozier Sr., father of former unofficial chief portrayer Alex Ivan Dozier and state conservationist with USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service. Matthew Saskiestwa Gilbert, UI professor and director of American Indian Studies. Chief Craig Harper, leader of Peoria Nation. Patricia Brown Holmes, Chicago attorney, alumni, and former judge and UI trustee. Sheila Johnson, founder and CEO of Salamander Hotels and Resorts, vice chairman of Monumental Sports and Entertainment. Marty Kaufman, UI Senior Associate Athletic Director, overseeing external relations and trademark licensing. Lauren Kirby, President of Native American Indigenous Student Organization on campus. Dan Maloney, last official chief portrayer and financial advisor for Edwards Jones. Jane Hayes Rader, former UI trustee and member of UI Foundation Board of Directors. Vikram Sardana, Illinois Student Government Representative. Jamie Singson, UI alumnus, former director of Native American House and director of Illini Union. Commission Secretary, Professor Isabel Molina Guzman, Faculty Director of Diversity and Inclusion for College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. And next we have a piece from the NCAA Volleyball Tournament, UI versus Eastern Michigan, 7 tonight. Support from the community has been off the charts for the Illini, by Anthony Zillis, Champaign. For Illinois volleyball coach Chris Tamas, grocery shopping isn't always quick and easy. After all, the coach of the number 3 team in the country has become a recognizable figure in town. "It's hard for me to shop at the supermarket sometimes now, but I'll take it," said Tamas, who added that he gets around 100 texts after every win. "Everyone's respectful, so it's not too bad. But it's been great, and people usually say, 'Hey, nice job, coach. I'm really glad to see the team do what they're doing.' Around town, people are excited for what we're doing. I think you see that in the last handful of matches that we're selling out Huff and lines out the door and that stuff." That recognition isn't restricted to the coach. Senior Ali Bastianelli was recognized while shopping at Meijer recently and receives constant encouragement on social media. Junior Beth Prince has always had professors who voice support for the team, but that recognition has spread to the students this fall. "I think this year, just with all the success, there is a little extra buzz and a little extra twinkle in somebody's eye when they ask if I'm on the volleyball team, or they recognize me, or they say, 'Oh my gosh, you're doing so great,'" Prince said. The recognition of the team around town has been noticeable for those who follow it during a year that included a 17-3 Big Ten record and a 13-game winning streak to close out the regular season. Normally, Illinois volleyball chatter would be restricted to the diehards. Not this year. Throughout the season, everywhere I go, grocery stores, Espresso Royale, people know I'm a volleyball fan, and they would bring it up, said Tom Rosansky, who has been going to games since 1991. "I think it reinforces my feeling, and I've felt this way for a long time, that to me, volleyball is the best sports entertainment in town. It's a little bit like, 'See, that's what I've been telling you.'" The excitement for the team can be encapsulated by its final match of the regular season against Purdue, which was on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Normally, the crowd is relatively sparse for the senior day match, with students on break. "We did not anticipate a sellout," said Katie Taylor, who helps lead volleyball tickets for the athletic department. Taylor and the ticketing department were wrong. Huff was packed, and late-arriving fans had to be turned away. Taylor said around 150 students attended the game, meaning they came back to campus a day early. Furthermore, the ticket sales department hasn't had to put on their usual promotions for the Illini's 2 sellouts this season. Kathy Bowersox, the president of the Illini Network's supporters group, thinks the difference between 2018 and years previous is that it isn't necessarily the marquee opponents who draw sellout crowds. It's the Illini. "The huge sellout matchups I remember would have been when Nebraska was in town or when Penn State was in town, when the big teams showed up," said Bowersox, who has gone to games for around 3 decades. "I think typically we get a couple of thousand, and when we get 4,000 in there, it's a huge difference. Bauer Socks already has tickets booked for the Final Four in Minneapolis, although that isn't a sign of overconfidence. She and her husband try to go every year. The tournament is within driving distance, and she said they'll buy tickets for next year's Final Four in Pittsburgh when they're in Minneapolis. Several Illini fans, she knows, are already making plans for the trip, and many more will likely make the drive if the Illini make it through four matches over two weekends at Huff Hall. Tickets for this weekend's first two rounds have sold at a rapid pace. Associate Athletic Director Jason Hegemeyer is advising people to avoid the line and pick up their tickets at State Farm Center before 1 p.m. today. Will Call at Huff opens at 3:30 p.m. Bauer Socks knows she'll see some faces that she might not have seen before at the games this weekend, and for her, that's been part of the fun of this incredible season. It's been exciting to share enthusiasm and to see people at matches you might not have seen before, she said. There's renewed interest and new curiosity. And we'll turn now to the opinions page and begin with an editorial called "Now You See It, Now You Don't." That was some rhetorical assault that didn't happen Tuesday in Springfield. Illinois legislators occupy a make-believe world, one where money grows on trees and chickens never come home to roost. But the delusions under which our Solons labor aren't limited merely to financial malpractice. They extend well beyond, even to the point of pretending that things that happened on the Illinois House floor didn't happen. Here's how the Associated Press described this week's rewriting of history. The Illinois House took the rare step Wednesday of erasing from its record a Democratic legislator's remark suggesting she'd like to infect the water supply of a GOP colleague's loved ones with a broth of Legionella. Legislative debate sometimes gets strident, but rarely as personal as Representative Stephanie Kifowit made it Tuesday when discussing legislation that would raise the $100,000 legislative cap on damages to $2 million through the state's Court of Claims. The General Assembly passed the bill raising the limits in response to the outbreak of Legionnaires' disease at a veteran's home in Quincy. In vetoing the legislation, Governor Bruce Rauner said, "It's appropriate to raise the $100,000 damages limit, but boosting it to $2 million would be excessive and unaffordable." During the House debate, Republican State Representative Peter Breen defended Rauner's position. Breen's suggestion of a compromise number between $100,000 and $2 million was hardly unreasonable. Indeed, the only thing extraordinary about Breen's comments was the extraordinary response it generated from the Aurora legislator. "I would like to make him a broth of Legionella and pump it into the water system of his loved ones so they can be infected, they can be mistreated, they can sit and suffer by getting aspirin instead of being properly treated and ultimately die," Kifowit said. She wrapped up her poisonous comments in an unintentionally hilarious manner. "I respectfully ask for you to support this bill," Kifowit said. She spoke of her desire to fatally poison Breen's family, but Kifowit, obviously, meant it in the nicest way. After becoming the target of criticism for her remarks, Kifowit first insisted that her words were misinterpreted, although they were recorded both in writing and audio. Then she issued an insincere apology for what she called her poor choice of words during what she called a serious discussion of pending legislation. "Kifowit may be sorry she said what she said, but only because her comments were widely publicized and not at all well received. She clearly meant what she said." But her faux apology was equally ill-advised. Kifowit was not engaging in a serious discussion. Breen's comments were serious and directed solely at the issue of the state's liability. Apparently unable to meet that argument, Kifowit did what speakers often do when they lack an intelligent response to a reasonable argument. They lash out by engaging in personal attacks or emotional appeals. That, not Kifowitz's death wish for Breen's family, was the real revelation from the controversial debate. She's unequipped for the responsibilities that go with her job as a member of the Illinois House. So are many of her colleagues, showing once again that Illinois isn't in the mess it is because the General Assembly is run by geniuses. And now in the From Our Readers section, we'll begin with a piece written by Mike Nelson Sr. of Champaign called Maui Tournament Coverage a Joke. The Maui basketball tournament, in my opinion, was ruined by the team of idiots commentating the games, especially Bill Walton, who thought his autobiography was more important than play-by-play. This was not comedy club night for the two of them looking for laughs. If it was, the cameraman could have just focused on Walton's 7-inch porcelains hanging out of his mouth and a close-up of his hot pants shorts. What a disgrace. And that was again written by Mike Nelson Sr. of Champaign. The next piece is written by Peggy Patton of Urbana. It's called Gun Violence Claim Isn't Correct. John Lott's claim that gun-free zones invite mass shootings in a November 25th GIST commentary in the News Gazette has been widely disputed by the National Research Council, RAND Corporation, and others because of flaws in Lott's research. I will not restate those well-documented criticisms. I wish, however, to question Lott's underlying assumption that shooters behave rationally and seek out gun-free areas. In reality, many shooters target a location based on an emotional grievance, a lost job or romantic rejection, or because of an attachment to a particular person or place. An FBI study of 160 active shootings between 2000 and 2013 shows that of the shootings that occurred in commercial or educational areas, the shooter had some relationship with the area in 63% of the cases. And counter to Lott's claim, many of the active shootings in the FBI's database occurred in areas that were not gun-free zones. Public mass shootings account for a fraction of our nation's gun deaths, but they are troubling because they occur without warning and are increasing. As of November 25th, there have been 322 mass shootings in 2018, according to the Gun Violence Archive, a nonprofit that tracks shootings in the U.S. The GVA defines a mass shooting as a single incident in which four or more people, not including the shooter, are shot and or killed at the same general time and location. There is a scientific consensus on the association between stronger gun laws and lower gun violence. More guns in more places make us less safe. And that again was written by Peggy Patton of Urbana. The next piece was written by Todd Salen of Champaign called Kudos to Agency for Football Finals. I want to take this opportunity to congratulate the Champaign County Convention and Visitors Bureau for its outstanding work representing the community at this year's high school state football finals at Memorial Stadium. Their efforts organizing Tent City and the team welcomes were exceptional. As a team host, I was in the middle of the enthusiasm. I am confident the players, coaches, and fans felt welcome in our community. Jane DeLuce and her staff, especially Ryan Reed, deserve a huge round of applause from each of us for their hard work. While we have 2 years until our next hosting of the finals, I encourage everyone to attend and enjoy the games. And that again was written by Todd Salen of Champaign. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, November 30th, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.